Well, we're down one.
She is messy. Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're going to be welcoming Dr. Evan Goldstein once again for this month's Tales from the Tale. It's a very incredible story, very powerful, very...
Intense,
and so bear with us, but we're gonna get through it. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with my two bitches, sans one, because we're down one. She's gone. So let's start with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish,
and good to be with you guys. It's Tom, and welcome
not
you
Chris.
All to
the dish.
It's gonna be weird because Chris is out. He's out. He's been having a good time living his life, and he'll be back next week. Let's just leave it at that.
That's perfect place to leave it.
So as we mentioned, Dr. G is going to be joining us today. We've been playing phone tag and email tag, and we were supposed to have him on last week's episode, but we finally got him on. He'll be on with us on the second half of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And but before that, we've got so much that we need to... talk about, and we're going to do so before we go to break. And so I'm just going to kick it off and say, how about we talk about our weekend? So Nick, tell us, how was your weekend?
Sure. Can you turn me up a little bit in my ears? Thank you. Oh, you're so sweet.
Can you hear yourself a lot better now?
I can. That being said, no, this weekend was great. I mean, it was long.
Yes,
it was.
I ate
and drank a lot. But we had a really good time. We, Wednesday night, we had dinner with a friend, of course, it's Steve. He cooked a wonderful meal. And then we did 4th of July here. We cooked a wonderful meal.
We did we barbecued. Yeah. And we did burgers, and we did the
hot
burgers
dogs
that our mystery guest in the studio loves. Mm-hmm. And and we had hot dogs and drinks and Trulies. And
yeah, it was great. And then we went to see the fireworks in this like peninsula area.
Yeah, it's my little secret spot.
And we were eaten alive. Like, it was so bad. I've got, like, bumps all over my legs and arms.
It's funny because we were standing out there, and while we were walking in there, I was like, oh, my God, we're going to get murdered by these bugs. And then all of a sudden, Trish says, as soon as we get to the end and we're watching the fireworks, he's like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up with Zika or something before I leave this.
I said, I'm getting little... Zika tonight.
Yeah. But it was fun. And then we came back to the house, and we hung out even more. And you slept over.
Yeah.
So we had a little sleepover, and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was the 4th of July, and we saw, you know, the boom booms, and my
bang
dog
bangs.
My dog was going crazy, poor Fitz.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? This weekend for me, I had, so we all know that I have an epidemic in my life, and it's called Steven.
Uh-huh. Anything that pretty much is named Steven.
So this weekend, this guy, so I worked on Friday, and I worked on Sunday. And this guy came up to me on Friday night, and he's like, hey, you know so-and-so? And I was like, yeah, I went to college with that person. We live together. She's wonderful. And it was just like this awkward silence between us. And he was a very attractive guy, very nice. And I was like, by the way, I'm Nick. What's your name? He's like, I'm Steven. Just started laughing, like straight up like, hardcore laughing, and everybody around the bar, because there were a couple friends around the bar, just started laughing at this poor guy. And he's like, I don't understand what's so funny about my name. And I was like, don't worry about it. You're fine. It has nothing to do with you.
Nothing to do with you. It's everything to do with her.
Mm-hmm. So then on Sunday, this super attractive guy comes into the bar, very nice all night long, very like put together, didn't like get drunk, like had good conversation with him. And I looked at my coworker and I was like, his name's Steven. And he was like, how do you know that? I'm like, I'm just guessing that his name is Steven. So the end of the night, it's like 10 to 1. I was like, by the way, you look really familiar to me. I don't think we've met before, but my name's Nick. What's your name? And he's like, Steven.
Stop it.
And I swear to God, I just looked at him and my jaw dropped and I was like, wait, seriously, what is your name? He's like, my name's Steve. And I was like, I cannot handle this. It has become an epidemic in my life.
Like, seriously, like every single person that you've ever either
if they're attractive.
Dated or attractive or you find them attractive, their name is Steven.
Uh-huh.
You had one exception and it was Stefan.
No, I had somebody literally message me on, I think it was Tinder, and his name was S-T-I-V-N. I was like, now they're just trying to trick me. they're coming at me from all angles. This is not okay.
Lord have mercy. That's too funny, though.
I just couldn't believe it. When he walked in, I looked at Jose, and I was like, he's got to be a Steven. And Jose was like, why? I'm like, because I find him very attractive. And then we talked, and it was a great conversation. And I looked at him, I'm like, it's definitely a Steven. And then it fucking was. I was like, how does this happen to me? They're everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere, but you have a way of fishing them out of the sea. It's like you're standing at the end of the pier and you're like literally fishing Steve's out of the water.
I know. It's terrible.
What am I going to do with you?
Oh, no. And so at the end of the night last night, I was kind of like chatting with the guy, and my coworker comes up to me, grabs me, and is like, Nick, no. Stop. No, Nick. I was like, okay, good. I almost gave him my number. Pull me away from this situation, please.
Well, you should have. Why not?
I think I need to, like, eradicate that.
You can't get rid of the name. I mean, it's like Smith. Like, Steven is to first names what Smith is to last names. It's like you're bound to just marry one. I think you are.
Just have that getaway car ready. That's all I have to say.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Yeah, no, but it was. It was a very, very amazing weekend, very intense. Mm-hmm. I went to Russia.
You did.
I did.
Actually, Russia came to you.
Yes, three times.
Never thought we would say that on the show, but...
No, I...
She went to Moscow.
Moscow. I think my hole did, but yes. We did the whole 4th of July thing, and then, when was it? Saturday, I was on one of the... gay social apps, if you want to call them that. And so I was messaging back and forth with this young man, and I didn't know he was Russian, but he was. And then so we ended up getting together. We hung out. We went and had lunch. And then after that, we came back to the house, and it got very heated very quick. And it was amazing.
I was worried about you, honestly, when you told me the story.
I was like, Lord have mercy. I went to Russia.
Well, no, you were like, so like, he just wouldn't get out of me. He wouldn't stop. I'm like, did you say no? Did you say stop?
I know. I said yes and keep going.
But the way you posted to me, you were like, he just wouldn't get out of me.
I was like, dude, you just literally like finished again. I'm in my 40s. I can't do this.
And then you did.
And then I did.
And then you did it again.
And then I did it again. And I was like, holy shit, three times the charm I ever done.
Let me tell you, I went to dinner on Saturday night with a Steven. And
of course.
And I walk into the bar, and Tom's kind of joyful most of the time. But I walk in, and this bitch is like glowing and bouncing off the walls. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. I was loosey-goosey. Mm-hmm. It was fun. We had a good time.
Russia and, got put in you.
Mm-hmm. You're nasty. And no, I did. I did. It got very Sochi quickly.
Mm-hmm. So now Russia is also trying to infiltrate.
Gay talk.
Yeah.
Imagine
it's
that.
Happening.
So it's happening. Anyway, it was fantastic. It was amazing. It's long overdue because Lord knows I needed it. And yeah, it was a good weekend. Overall, it was. It really was.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, mowing. That's usually my thing. Mowing lawns. And I had, during one of our last windstorms, two of my umbrellas are down for the count. So, of course, I went and picked up, not the same size, I picked up a much bigger one. And this one's like 11 feet
it barely
radius.
Fits.
It barely fits, yeah. But that bitch covers. And yeah, so I put it up and it's got cute little LED lights. So at night you can turn them on. And sort of kind of have light right under you or right over you. And it looks amazing. And it's bright red. And I love it because I can see it coming all the way down my road. So I like it. It was a good weekend.
Yeah.
So for the sake of time, it's been 10 minutes already. Wow. Time flies when you're on Prozac, I suppose. Let's jump into some stories. We don't have a cocktail today.
We actually do? I'm productive.
Okay.
And today's signature cocktail is a pear mojito.
A pear mojito.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's 1.5 ounces of Mount Gay, of course. Black barrel rum, 0.75 ounces of lime juice, 0.75 ounces of simple syrup, 1 ounce ambient pear puree, fresh mint leaves, and club soda. Put that all together, muddle it slightly. I can't muddle things, so Chris would have to do it.
Yeah.
Shake it up, pour it into a glass, and you have a beautiful pear mojito.
Yeah, over crushed ice, people. Mojitos use crushed ice.
I mean, like, live your life, but yeah. Yes.
But that's awesome. It sounds amazing. I actually love mojitos. Actually, we go to this place in New Haven, and I haven't been in a while, and I think we should go at some point, Barracuda, and they make amazing mojitos there. And one of my favorites is their coconut mojito. Delicious.
What is with you and coconut?
Coconut and pineapple. Those are the two best things that you could ever eat in your life. They are. Something wrong? You're deflating? Anyway. All right. So listen, let's jump into some stories so we can then welcome the great doctor. So for all of you who are on our Facebook page and liked our page, earlier this morning I had posted a video, and it is a dramatical reenactment of a father coming home.
Dramatical?
Well, it's a...
Dramatic.
How would I say? it's a dramatized...
Dramatized?
No.
Yeah, I work in theater.
Whatever it is. It's a dramatized story. Yeah, this is going to be a lot of craziness going on, but it's a dramatized story of a young woman who is seeing her father for the first time as a woman. Her father left to the military and left a young boy and came back to a young lady. And I knew that it was all, you know, staged, and it's sort of kind of like a production and a video and stuff. But nonetheless, it was just very, very, very heartwarming to watch and to see how there's no words whatsoever exchanged through this whole thing until the end, when dad sees his now daughter and looks at her, and she's about to run out the room, and he goes and grabs her and hugs her and says, "Hi, Allie," and calls her by her name. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely beautiful. So I showed Trish today in the studio. He was crying. And normally, you know, we would always say, oh, you know, it's you really need to if you're going to be doing something related to the LGBT community, you're going to be portraying people that are part of our community, you should use actors that are part of our community. And this young, beautiful, gorgeous woman is part of the community. She is a transgender woman, a young woman, and she was casted to do this specifically because of that. And so I wanted to commend the producers who decided to do this for using someone that actually is a transgender woman.
Wasn't this about her life, though?
Not necessarily. It was just sort of kind of like a story that they just wanted to bring out. And it's sort of kind of like wants to like tug at your emotions. But then I went to her IMDb. Is that what it is?
That is.
And that's where like actors, you know, are listed with what their works are, et cetera, et cetera. And I noticed that she's got a lot of roles playing a transgender young woman in very notable pieces of work that have been on, you know, network television. Like, for example, she was casted to play Quinn Darby in the episode titled She for the Good Doctor, which is a TV series that's mm-hmm. very popular. It is on one of the networks, and I can't remember which one it is, but she played a character in line with who she is, and she's done other amazing stuff as well. But the thing is that I wanted to recognize, for example, the Good Doctor in the series itself for casting people that are part of the community to represent a role that is of our community. Because we've seen
yeah.
times like, for example, where Felicity Huffman played a transgender woman, but she's a real woman herself.
Or heterosexual men play gay men mm-hmm. in different movies. Why do we do that?
And so I just wanted to basically point out that, you know, they're doing it right. They're doing it right. I mean, if you're going to, you know, put someone's life or try to explain to a demographic about what the emotions are behind meeting your father for the first time, definitely use somebody from our community because they can relate. And not only that, it just brings us to a point where visibility is front and center.
That the video too, like when he came home and he said her name.
Yes.
What made that moment even more powerful was in the beginning, her dead name is used.
That's right.
And then at one point in the video, she receives a grade on a test at which her dead name is on, and she crosses it out and writes her new name, Allie. And then you get home, and the only words you hear are everything that she was walking away from or changing.
Yeah.
And the one person that she hasn't seen in so long, who she's afraid may not love her anymore, just acknowledges her by her name, and that's all you hear.
And this is the first time that father is seeing his child for the first time. And he calls her by her name. And I thought it was just absolutely beautiful and well put together. It was an amazing 2.5 minutes of cinematography that will stick with you and make you cry.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So next time, don't play it for me like 15 minutes before the show.
I'm sorry that I did that. I did go, that to you. But
stop crying, Trish. I'm like, you little bitch.
there's three other shows that she was a part of. She played Aristiana. Or she was actually, the character's name was Sophia Grace Gianni. The show was called The True Adventures of Wolf Boy. She also played a short individual role in a short film called The Real Thing. And then, of course, there was Transparent, which was a TV series for in where she played in one of the episodes that was called If I Were a Bell. And I didn't check it out, but I'm assuming that may have something to do with wanting to either be a Disney princess or something, but I'll look into it and figure it out. But it was just amazing. And it really touched me this morning. And I was like, we need to sort of kind of put a spotlight on this today because it's beautiful. And because we're still celebrating Pride, you know, we're coming off out of the month of June, but we're going to celebrate Pride for the rest of our lives. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty gay, so.
That's right. And so we're also going to put this particular video and the link on tonight's post so you guys can check it out for yourself and tell us what you think. So, Trish, what do you have for today?
I mean, I'm not ready to talk about it. So I think that let's take an early break.
Okay.
And then we'll have
Dr. G. She always finds a way to screw up with my time, but go ahead.
Then we'll have Dr. G on at 7, and then when we come back, we'll close out the show with this kind of really fun, different take on a story that will bring us into a conversation to close out the show. How about that?
Okay. All right. So listen, we're going to leave you. We're going to leave you with some music, and when we do come back, we are going to have Dr. Evan Goldstein join us for this month's Tales from the Tale. So here's some music. We'll be right back.
It's hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end, I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. 'Cause if you wanted me to move, you know I would, because I'm good at making you love me. And if I said I needed more than I came for, would you ignore me making you love me? So baby, play me all your love. See, 'cause if you don't you and I making our love intertwine. But baby, this is goodbye. Cause if you wanted me to move, you know I would. Because I'm good at making you love me. And I wanna have it. And if I said I needed more than I came for, would you ignore me making you love me? And I wanna be so.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was Time by Pat Riley, a previous guest of ours. And now, without further ado, the man, the myth, the legend, Dr. G is back with us here on Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast. Thank you for joining us, Doctor. How are you?
I am very good. Did you guys get a new camera?
No. Probably the lighting is a little different.
You guys look so, like, clear. It's perfect.
Oh, my God. Imagine that. We got Clearasil.
Yes, I was
going to
say.
I don't use that, but I use Clinique, so.
Yeah, she's an expensive hoe, this one.
I know, I need to find a doctor. Any suggestions?
What's going on? Talk to me. Tell me, what are you doing?
Not much. As you can see, Chris isn't here with us today.
We have a mystery guest in studio. She's not part of the show, but she's just listening. And, you know, she's a really dear friend of mine. And so she'll be listening to our conversation today.
He had a long weekend. He needed the day off.
He needed a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was going through it.
Wow. That's, you know, tough. Well, shout out to you.
Nothing that one of your fingers can't take care of.
Oh, my God. And then we walked down that road. How are you? What's new? What's going on? Oh.
Everything's cool. Same stuff. A lot of stuff going on. Busy, busy. But it's good.
Anything fun for Pride?
Actually, my kids are in sleepaway camp. So it was like this new transition of the kids being away. They're away for 7 weeks. And Andy and I are like trying to fall back in love with each other. You know? So it's a little bit of that.
Okay.
Well, that's amazing. And that's awesome. You know, to get 7 weeks with no kids, that's a lot of time to be able to do many amazing, beautiful things.
Yes. Yeah,
so we'll make sure that you use that time wisely.
Yes, exactly. Or we'll be divorced by the end of it. Who knows?
Oh, God.
So, all right. So listen, we warned our listeners that today's topic is going to be a little heavy. It's a little intense. We're going to be talking about one of your blog posts today. It's a young man who came to New York City for a production of a series or a TV series, and he ended up having something happen to him right on day one that changed his life forever. And so I wanted for you to set the stage for us, tell us a little bit about the story, and then we can jump into the conversation.
Yeah, so I mean, this story is actually continuing to evolve because it's just, it's one thing after another, and we'll go, you know, much more into detail with it. But you know, a super beautiful African-American boy from the South coming up here to shoot a pilot series in New York, and has new representation in New York, and arrives, gets settled, and then that representation says, hey, I want to introduce you to New York, we'll show you around, and let's have a good time, and, you know, party for your success. And then went out, started the evening, and then literally blacked out, and does not remember anything other than waking up in his new apartment, naked, and in pain, and didn't really know what had happened. And from the discussions, he's a fluid individual, doesn't truly identify. He's 19. So it's kind of like trying to figure himself out, and clearly wound up in some capacity, being drugged, and then date raped, unfortunately. And, you know, I think bits and pieces were there that he could kind of put together who he felt was or how this happened. And then when he woke up, he was really in excruciating pain. And he was so numbed by the entire situation that he kind of totally went into PTSD, kind of internalized mode, and really didn't tell anyone.
Right.
About this. And, you know, think about it. Like, you're 19 years old in a new fucking city. You just had this horrific thing happen. And we'll talk about, like, there are places for you to go to seek help and to obviously, because this is a criminal event, and we'll go over that. But you can imagine at 19 trying to kind of, and alone, to try and internalize, how do you handle that?
In a city like New York.
Right. But first things first, though, I mean, you wake up in that situation. If it were, if I were in that situation, I would immediately want to seek medical attention. I would want to make sure that I was okay. And it surprised me, even with, I guess, PTSD, that this person didn't seek medical attention sooner than he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, this happened. You don't necessarily, you're not educated at 19 to know, hey, there's so many other things that potentially, and we'll talk about that, you know, that from STDs to HIV and all of that. I think, you know, he's so ashamed of the sequence of events that happened that you become so withdrawn.
There's so many layers. I mean, when you think about it, you did say he's a young black man from the South. You know, it's not the norm for a black man to be open about the fact that, you know, walk into a hospital and say, hey, I think I've just been raped. And, you know, and that's something that's really hard because of the dynamics of how homosexuality is seen in the black community to begin with. And so when you add on the layers of everything that happens in the story, like, I felt the anger with him.
Well, on top of that, too, you have the masculinity issue, right?
Yes.
So I'm wondering, I don't know if you have any information on this, but do you find that men who find themselves in this situation don't seek the medical attention they need, whereas women do more, or is that a common misconception?
No, I mean, I think people seek it if they're, one, already kind of plugged into systems, you know? I mean, you see it a lot where you have a primary care physician, or you know that there's a gay center or some support system where you now are kind of already plugged into that. You know, it's literally like a second or third day in New York,
yeah.
You know, and this entire situation. Plus, you're probably at 19, you know, in his shoes, looking at his sexuality in many different ways. And then all of a sudden now you take it up, you know, you get it up the ass in an uncontrolled date rape situation. And now you're looking at yourself being like, well, fuck, am I gay? Like, what am I? And right. Like, now all of a sudden I'm going to go and I'm going to be outed.
Right.
And I don't even know if that's truly me. So there's so much going to that. And then all of a sudden, you know, days just go by where you're like, oh, you know what? I mean, most of us have had situations where we bleed out our ass or we have a hemorrhoid or a pain and we're like, oh, fuck it. It'll get better. And like, you know, you sit there, like shove the Preparation H up there and just like pray to the gods that you're like, you know, back on the saddle again next week.
To the booty gods.
But,
yes.
But, you know, and all of a sudden a week or two goes by and you're like, fuck, it is really, really bad. Right. And then obviously it culminated to the point where he went to like an urgent care center and it was a significant anal abscess. Of which they had to drain, which obviously is super, super painful. And they drained that. They gave him antibiotics, but the wrong antibiotics. They finally did some swabbing to find out that it was chlamydia and gonorrhea, and started the appropriate treatment that he needed to get going with that. And at that time, things were getting a little bit better, but yet there were still a lot of anal issues going on. And then he finally found his way into my office, and I could see that not only was there still an anal abscess, but there was a significant amount of anal warts that developed quite rapidly, and there was an extensive amount of that. And then also, when you have an abscess, sometimes you can develop what's called a fistula. We've spoken about this before, but there's a connection that develops. So it's like a pimple on the outside of your ass, and a connection is developed from that head of the pimple all the way inside into the actual rectum or into the anus. And he had developed that as well. And, you know, when I had met him, he's such a sweet kid. And like, you know, you sit there and you try and just figure out, all right, how are we just going to get you anally clear so that you can then like just work on the rest of this shit so that you can move forward. And he had said, you know, look, I really wanted to do was just leave New York. You know, it's totally tainted. You know, I want to start fresh and start anew. And he was, a you know, of course, an actor, and going to L.A. was another stepping stone for him. And I started to kind of treat him and take care of him in Los Angeles. And during that time, he didn't have insurance and, you know, money was really low. And we're trying to get him plugged into the systems to figure out how can I actually do what I need to do, which is get rid of the anal warts and treat the fistula and then start the cycle of getting him healed. Whether or not he wants to bottom ever again, I don't know, but I would kind of prepare him for that. But with that being said, I did some kind of usual repeat blood tests, making sure that the STDs had cleared, and then he wound up being HIV positive, which was the significant twist. So, you know, you talk about a trifecta or, you know, four ridiculous things of just the trauma associated with it: the anal abscess, the chlamydia gonorrhea, the anal warts, plus HIV positivity.
Yeah, he had a rough night.
I mean, so like every disease horrible. And
I wrote, you know, you can't make it up, man. It's just, it's like,
it's, and at 19 to go through with that, to go through all of that at 19 years of age. I mean, I'm in my 40s. Nick is in his 30s. And, you know, for us, we're aware of the situation. We know what's out there. We know what to do. When you're 19 years old, really, all you want to do is, hey, listen, I got an apartment. I want to go act. I'm going to be this big star. The last thing on your mind that you have is the thought of going out with someone who you're supposed to trust. This is your agent or whoever it was, and ending up in a situation where you don't remember an entire period of your life. And in that instant, in that period that you lost, you come out of the other side of that with every single sexually transmitted disease that any man could ever experience all in one day.
Totally. I mean, I think, you know, it raises a lot of issues. And I mean, I think you have to first think of, obviously, we're trying to push PrEP as a preventative approach from an HIV perspective. So obviously this would have been a great individual, but clearly, you know, he wasn't truly even active anally. So, you know, you can't figure that part out. I think one of the things that I would think for everybody, all the listeners, is seeking medical attention right the fuck away. Because the reality is, you know, the post-exposure prophylaxis and the post-exposure treatment, there's so many things that could have been done if he was seen earlier and or seen at an appropriate clinic that manages this all the time. Forget the criminality side of it, like sperm and DNA and figuring out who the fuck is the asshole that actually did this and prosecuting that person. That's one complete side of it. But the other side is like just own self, you know, help to really, from a preventative perspective. Because, you know, you could have looked at this risk and you would have known that this was a high risk for everything under the sun. And so I would have done the anti-HIV, obviously, treatment. You would have done probably chlamydia and gonorrhea treatment right off the bat. So he wouldn't have developed that anal abscess. And then obviously have been followed up. Now, he probably would have gotten the anal wart treatment. The anal warts. But with that being said, if you caught it early enough, that we can kind of spearhead that and try and treat that and kind of combat that. But I think a lot of that all stemmed from failure to report where he needed to go and get the appropriate treatment.
So I want to dive in a little bit more to PEP. I want to know, so like, for example, if a woman goes and she has the morning after pill, she's sick for a while. And I know that it's an intense amount of medicine that you're putting into your body. And I'm not trying to steer people away from doing something if they find themselves in a situation like that, but I want them to know
that it exists,
that it exists, one, and how it affects your body when you actually go in and say, hey, this happened to me and I need to do this. So they give you this medicine. How do you react? Are you sick? Are you okay? Like, what's the following couple of days?
It's totally variable. You know, and I am definitely not an HIV expert. You know, I see a lot of it. I can talk about it. And so I would kind of say that we would get an HIV specialist involved to communicate all of these things. But I think one of the things that I've had to be on it, I got a couple of needle sticks when I was in residency. And, you know, you don't know who that person is. They're under anesthesia or it's a trauma-associated situation. And you put yourself on it. You know, it has changed tremendously from when we were 20 years ago. I'm dating myself. But 20 years ago, you know, I took it and you're shitting all the time. You got stomach cramps. You're not hungry. You feel totally gross. And you can't wait to just get the fuck off of it. Nowadays, you know, it's definitely more tolerable. But everybody has different reactions. I mean, I think at the end of the day, most people would take those reactions to know that they're going to be
100%
HIV negative. You know, the good thing nowadays is that HIV positivity is treatable, and, you know, it becomes more of a chronic disease. But you know that there are higher incidences of lots of different things from having HIV positivity. And it's a life-changing event, just let alone this entire situation. You know, I was under the assumption of like, okay, I'll get rid of this kid's warts. I'll get rid of the abscess and fistula, and then he could finally move on. But every fucking day, this guy has to take a pill and remember. And that, to me, was the most significant of this all, that I don't know if you could ever, like...
You can't put that behind you.
No.
How do you move on? I don't know.
Every single step that you take going forward as part of your treatment is going to be a constant reminder of what you don't know happened, but you know the result of how what happened that you don't know ended up putting you in this situation. So I wanted to ask you, you mentioned earlier in our conversation that this is still an ongoing situation. Can you talk a little bit about where he is today mentally, you know, in state of mind as far as treatment and how you're progressing to just give him a quality of life going forward, even though he went through this very horrific and violating
experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first off, he's a super strong guy. So, I mean, I think that he's much stronger than me, for sure, in terms of his responses and understanding and just saying, hey, look, it's a really unfortunate set of circumstances, but I'm strong, I'm here, and, you know, I'm willing. Obviously, I plugged him into mental health and, most importantly, HIV treatment, right? I can't touch him on a surgical perspective until his HIV is controlled. And actually, a lot of his issues of kind of the fistula component and the warts are manifested because the HIV is not controlled. So when your body is fighting the HIV, obviously the immunosuppression is there. And that's why a lot of people back in the 80s and 90s, they would obviously have Kaposi's sarcoma and secondary cancers and actually die more from pneumonia and some of these other infections. And it's the same thing that's going on now. Unless you have treatment, a lot of these people's numbers are not where they obviously need to be. And systemically, you're getting sick. And HPV can be, you know, the anal warts can be one manifestation that the HIV is not controlled. And so that sometimes also is in people that are on HIV medication. If you develop an anal wart or HPV or things come back, let's say you've had it in the past, then it is something to think about that maybe the HIV treatment is not totally suppressing what needs to be. And so with that being said, the first thing is to get him on appropriate treatment. And they'll do genetic kind of testing on the actual HIV that he has to figure out kind of the medical and pharmaceutical treatments that are best for that individual, and then tailor that treatment. And then once he's on that, we could follow some numbers to make sure that he's in the right state, and then I can do some surgical stresses to now start the corrective process. And some of the stuff may actually get better just with him being on appropriate HIV treatment. But it's complicated because kid has no fucking money.
Yeah, he's a struggling actor,
you know, trying to get him plugged into the California, you know, system to get him help, which we did. And thankfully that there are a lot of resources at local centers where we can kind of send people to and we can get at least the basic stuff going and then slowly start the rebuilding process. I think a lot of it obviously is mental and psychosocial, and I have to start just rebuilding anally to try and see if we can at least just get him into some state of normalcy.
So I know because of like HIPAA and all of the medical rules, you can't really share a lot of information. But when you say that you're plugging him into these, you know, a professional for mental health and an HIV treatment therapy system or process, are you as a team working together with this individual, or can you not really talk about it? And how does that work?
We can talk amongst each other as healthcare professionals, as long as, you know, there's consent to do that. Most people, when you're going to physicians' offices, whether you know it or not, are kind of signing everything away in terms of that HIPAA. Yes, it's being protected, and yes, it's internal, but, and especially like, you know, sometimes we bring family members into the discussion, and then I would need, or a physician would need, a waiver and consent that a discussion can actually happen amongst people. But yes, I think, you know, again, it's getting on the phone, conversing with everybody so we all have the same story, and then collaborating to figure out amongst everybody as, okay, Evan, you're ready to go to surgery, take him to surgery. Okay, no, you're not. Or Evan, he's not mentally ready to have surgery. And how do we kind of build that capacity to do that? I mean, there's a lot of that going back and forth. And I think it's a cohesive group of physicians that are trying to better the clients.
So I'm blown away right now. So this guy that found himself in the situation had another person who is clearly infected with, I mean, for all he knows, it could have been one person or it could have been more, but it's clearly infected with these diseases and now spreading them around and probably doing this to other people. So I want to move a little bit past what we're talking about medically and move into the criminal aspect of this and where this patient is and where we hope he will go with this story. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm definitely not a lawyer, and I definitely don't know that much about the criminal system in regards to this. But I think that clearly not reporting and not documenting and not getting all the appropriate testing and data together obviously makes the further we go out probably less likely that there is ever going to be that. And yeah, I mean, I think it's awful. I mean, I think one of the things we speak about all the time on this is we as a community not only need to look at ourselves, but the effect that ourselves has on everybody. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as a 19-year-old, do you see that? No, you're only looking about you, right? But, you know, as I am getting older and you start to analyze and you start to see over and over, well, okay, this happened. Clearly, this is not the first time, because when he disclosed this to the agency, there was some prior issues associated. And right then and there, it should have been, hey, well, I do have a responsibility, a social responsibility to take action, because this person could be a 19-year-old boy, could be a 15-year-old boy, could be a 40. Doesn't matter who it is. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that there is somebody going around with uncontrolled HIV that is sexually assaulting people in a non-consensual way. And that's pure criminality, no matter what, even on the non-HIV side, right? I mean, so it's just a matter of trying to get someone to go to the police, mm-hmm. do what they need to do, and take ownership of that. And that's right. A hard, you know, hopefully we'll never be in that position. Hopefully nobody that's listening will ever be in that position, but there's no way that we would ever know how we would react.
But it's so hard to do, right? Because you have to think about the fact that you're a victim, right? And now the responsibility of being responsible for someone's irresponsibility is laid on you. And you're the one that has to go and report it. And you're the one that has to go through the criminal system and deal with people questioning you and saying, why did you do this? Or why didn't you do this? And et cetera, et cetera. The problem I find with the justice system is that quite often when someone comes forward, whether you're a male or female, and this is very, very common for females, is they're not believed. And they're not taken seriously. And people tend to have a tendency to look at them like, yeah, you're a victim, but you probably asked for it. And when you look at...
So I'm just going to stop you for a second, because I want to say that I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But if you take the initiative before a certain amount of time, there would be remnants of a drug in the person's body. There would be remnants of aggressive act toward his body. Yes. And these are things that could be documented. And I think that's what Dr. G is saying. And these are things that, as an individual, we have a responsibility to our community to then go and document these things and make sure you're taking care of yourself and feel, yes, you will feel, there will be shame, there will be embarrassment, but you are also not only taking care of yourself, but you're taking care of an entire community by taking that step and effort and saying, hey, I need to be swabbed. This happened last night. It's been less than 24 hours. They'll take your blood work. They'll be able to find what was in your system. And that will then help lead to the ultimate prosecution. Whether they believe you or not, if you have a certain drug in your system, you're clearly roofied or you're clearly drugged to the point where you are unable to function.
But how do you tell that to a 19-year-old that hasn't really experienced anything?
That's why we're having this conversation.
Yeah. And so, what I'm trying to say is that I think that law enforcement and those in charge of agencies that are responsible for receiving these type of reports need to do better in ensuring that they provide a safe space for victims to mm-hmm. come forward and say, this is what happened to me. How can I go through this process with the least amount of damage? I've already been victimized. Yeah. Don't do it to me again.
Yeah. And on the flip side too, I'm sorry, Dr. G, you're still on the phone, but on the flip side too, I think a lot of it has to do with sex education in schools. Yeah. We should.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think is so interesting is that he was in the city that actually has the most access mm-hmm. to everything as it relates to fluidity and gay sex and or anything as it relates to anal penetration and criminality. and yet it's such a big city and you're all alone that you don't even know how to actually access that. And I think that that's where you guys come into play, and sex education, which we're trying to do and talk about and write about, is, again, it is kind of figuring out how do we define what the normal course of action should be post something. Mm-hmm. For then people to kind of put together and say, you know what, this is actually not normal. And how do I take ownership of that and figure out the right way to make things better with it? And I think it's just talking, but I don't know. You know, I go back and forth and like, fuck, I didn't know a goddamn thing at 19 years
Neither
old.
Neither did I, which is...
And then like, I didn't even know much at 43, you know, let alone like, you know, you look at it and you go, Jesus Christ, you know, at 19 and... You're internalizing everything, and this. So
I'm still trying to figure out who you are.
It's really a tough situation. I think we have to also think about family dynamics and the support. That's right. You know, like would you call your mother? You know, do you not have a mother? Do you not have a father? Like, who do you call and who do you create a support system with? And I think that also goes back to education as well, which is like, regardless of whether you're gay or not, is that like, how do you set kind of, if this happens, this is what I would do. And how do you make sure in any situation when you're finally leaving the nest that you have access to people that are supportive in some capacity to give you guidance? Because when you're raped like that and you are completely blindsided by it, your entire everything, all your rationale thinking, everything is not there anymore. And you need a support system to make that better.
That's right. You had mentioned earlier in our conversation that you had steered him in the right direction to get him plugged into the California health system and being able to have access to medical treatment, et cetera, and agencies and organizations that were available locally. Can you talk a little bit about how that happens? Like, can you give us an example of what agencies that may be either a national or an interstate agency that they can go to seek medical assistance if they don't have insurance?
Yeah, I mean, most centers, especially New York, LA, like the LGBT Center or the Gay Men's Health Crisis, a lot of these places, even if you're not regionally where an office is, they're all available and able to be reached via phone to give guidance. Also, there's a tremendous amount on their website that you're able to access that. Most centers are dealing with a variety of non-insured to insured, and they have social workers and they have everyone internal to figure out how to navigate that system. We pay a lot of fucking taxes for people to have access to the appropriate care. And so I think that I implore everybody that's listening that you should get access to care. And there are many ways to accomplish that, especially on HIV positivity. If you're HIV positive, you kind of put yourself into a completely different category of access. And with that said, there are wonderful programs to support that. And also even drug companies have the support if people do not have the finances to go that. So I don't really do much other than getting them plugged in locally at more of a center that's appropriate for how they identify. And then they have kind of the infrastructure to truly make it work.
And guide them in that direction.
And guide them. Right, exactly.
That's awesome.
Wow. So yeah. So what are the next steps with this individual? Where do you see this hopefully ending up for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, like I said, it's maximizing this HIV treatment, of which once you're on the medication, there's serial blood tests that are done to evaluate the levels of your HIV viral load and your kind of protected effect from it with your immune system. And once that's in an appropriate level, then I think I have to start doing what we need to do surgically. For the anal abscess, I'm planning on just putting in a drain to allow everything to kind of calm down, and I'll treat the anal warts, leaving the drain in to now let everything settle, get rid of the warts, and then work on the kind of anal fistula treatment and figure out from there. The fistula stuff can be a little bit more complicated because that connection goes in and out of or through muscle.
Right.
And obviously, especially, you know, you can't cut the majority of that muscle because you'll have incontinence issues, et cetera. So with that said, it just kind of depends upon the severity. And I'll know more when I'm there. But it's a slow, it's going to be a long process. It really is, unfortunately.
So how is this affecting his day-to-day? Is he having problems just using the bathroom, or is he just in constant pain?
No, yeah, I mean, he's kind of someone that obviously has a pretty significant pain threshold because he's just...
So he's not me.
He's got a pretty good spirit, man. I mean, of all things, I mean, he is plugging through and going on callbacks and doing what he needs to do to be as productive as he can in his career that he's chosen. And I think, you know, after a while you get so numb, unfortunately, yeah. Mm-hmm. to your normal, you know, that new normal becomes, even if it's an 8 out of 10, that's what you expect it to be.
Right.
And so with that said, it's just maximizing as much treatment as we can to get him back to what he really should be, which is taking shits whenever he wants without having any problems. And then if he wants to engage anally, being able to engage at the drop of a pants.
So I have one more thing to ask you, and it might be a little complicated because you're a parent. But so this is a situation, and there are statistics on it, which I looked up earlier, and I don't have them. But the number of men that are raped in the LGBT community is actually relatively high. I think it's 26% and 37% of bisexual men from this 2010 study that I'm reading. What would you say as a parent to help educate your child if they found themselves in a situation like this at the age of 18 or 19?
I think one would be that there are daddy and a papa at home that love you regardless of anything that ever happens. And yes, it may be a trying period and it may be upsetting and it may be very difficult, but to know that there are two parents at home that have a somewhat of a wealth of information to allow us to navigate this together. And I think that that's really setting the standard from the second that the kids are born, you know, that how do you communicate? How do you, even if things are not right, how are you able to voice your opinion and stand up for something or vocalize something? And we work on that all the time with Sebastian. It's like, you know, you can't just react. There has to be a dialogue and there has to be an understanding as to why certain things have happened and how are we going to rectify that in the most effective way. And allow for someone to have the ownership to say something is not right, put up their hands and say something is not right, I need help, and to have the understanding of who that is going to be. Mm-hmm. And you know, you hope that you never with your kids or anyone ever has to go through a situation like this, but it's, again, I think it's like you said, back to the education, which is how do we talk about rape and victimization and internalized homophobia and all of these issues in a curriculum-based, community-based practice. Mm-hmm. Where we can talk. And I think it's doing what you guys are doing, which I applaud you. I mean, I think it's taking on topics, talking about all these things, it's putting it out there in the airwaves so that some people can kind of grasp this. And then hopefully they're going to be parents and they're going to kind of communicate this and really make it more of a concerted effort to really streamline the process for everybody.
Yeah. Well, again, this was a heavy topic, but thank you so much for coming on and talking about this with us.
I agree. And you know, you are always such an amazing person to turn to for situations like this and really understanding the gravity of the situation and from a medical perspective, what can and cannot be done. And to this young man, I hope that, you know, you take this experience, this horrible experience that you've gone through in your life and use it in a positive way to help not only yourself, but also help others in understanding that when something like this happens, there are resources out there that you can reach out to. There are places that you can go to try and at least make things better for you. And don't be afraid to seek those services because they're there for a reason. And it's situations like this that allow us to recognize that those services are important and they are needed.
Yeah, and I think that also I implore even healthcare professionals mm-hmm. to be trained in the right way. You know, again, it's, you know, we're in New York and LA, and even in New York, no one even thought of, even though it was a couple of weeks out, of talking to him about, you know, the issues associated with potentially being HIV positive. And so I think one of the things we always talk about is like, how do you demand as a gay man or as a fluid man, how do you demand these certain actions be done? And it's the education side that you now need to know that, hey, why aren't you doing an oral swab or an anal swab? Why aren't I urinating? What about post-exposure? You know, I'm not on PrEP. What? These are all the things that I think we just constantly need to talk about in the community so that you are actually spearheading the care. Because unfortunately, your assumption that people actually know what the fuck they're doing, you're going to be disappointed, unfortunately. It sucks.
You know, totally sucks. So very quickly, if I understand this correctly, post-pre-exposure and swabbing and all of these blood tests, et cetera, are not common practices when someone comes in into a medical facility saying that they've been raped?
They should be, right? They should be. But he probably didn't even disclose the severity of what was going on, and someone looked and saw just the anal abscess. But us as healthcare professionals needs to now go further and say, hey, do you identify? How do you identify? Did this happen from shitting or was it anal sex? And then all of a sudden people start to kind of lose the guard mm-hmm. where they're like, they'll break down and be like, okay, this is what truly happened. But if we don't as healthcare professionals kind of dig deeper literally into the situation, or you as a patient start to demand and understand what is expected as the standard of care, you know, then we're never going to see it where we actually want it to be. And that's why I think I do a lot of these shows, and we're doing a lot of push on Instagram and social. So follow us on Bespoke and Medium and Writing, because a lot of what we're trying to do is to really empower all of us mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. the information that now allows us to not only have you guys take the best care of each other and yourselves, but also just everyone that's involved in the community.
You know, it's funny. I know you probably have to go, but I want to just give you a shout out, because through the process of having you on the show, I've actually gone through the process of finding a new doctor recently. And I went through two before I found my current doctor, who turned out to be a gay man. And it was the best experience of my life. I was in a room with somebody who not only sat there and talked to me for over an hour about my medical history, my sexual practices, but I could openly say things to him that I never felt I could say in other spaces or felt comfortable to say in other spaces. And I think that if you're somebody that is homosexual or in the LGBTQ+ community, I think it's so, so important to find that doctor that you can have a conversation with, because I was so open and he received it in such a positive way. There was no judgment, and it was just a beautiful conversation that I finally felt like, oh my God, this doctor hears me and sees me and he will be there for me. And so I just wanted to thank you, because you inspired me to find a doctor that's taking care of me.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you all, even the ghost in the corner over there.
Well, Dr. G, as always, it is a pleasure to have you on the show and come on and talk about all these, you know, incredible testimonials and stories about what your patients go through and what you do to make their lives better every day. And not only that, but also reaching out to shows like ours and other forms of media to really educate the populace and let us know that, you know, there are options and there is help and that there's things that you can do to ensure that you remain safe, healthy and live a productive life within our community. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Maybe next time we can talk about like really good things like fucking butt sex.
Yes.
Right? I mean, and fisting and all the good things that we like to enjoy. And it was Pride and July 4th. And I'm seeing a surge of people coming in post-penetration.
Oh my God. You need to write a story about post-penetration Pride. Literally blog it and we will talk about it next month. I'm dead serious.
Let's do it. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Bye,
Doctor, you have a wonderful night. Thank you so much for joining us.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Well, as always, that is the incredible Dr. Evan Goldstein. He's amazing. I love this man. He's not only really easy to look at because he is gorgeous, but he really does a lot for the community, and it's just, you know, it's incredible. And it's really sad, right, for this young man. I had to stop myself at some point because I was ready to just sort of kind of break down because I feel the despair in a 19-year-old. I felt it in reading that story, and really, it was just intense. So anyway, so Nick, you had a story that you wanted to talk about before we went on break, but then you decided to throw that curveball on me. So I'm going to let you bring that up. We'll talk about that, and then we'll move into Mama Kim's Minute.
So I'm hesitant to bring this up because I'm, of course, a white Caucasian male, like super white.
But it's important. It needs to be talked about.
But it is super important and it needs to be talked about. So I want to bring up Little Mermaid. And I want to bring it up. I want to bring it up not because of the racial comments from other Caucasian people, which I'm sure we will dive into at some point in this conversation. But I want to bring up a different perspective of it, the origin of the story. And the origin of the story was actually Hans Christian Andersen was writing a story in hopes to woo another man. So this story was actually created because he fell in love with another man. And so all of the different characters kind of represent something different in his life at the time. But he actually falls in love with a human and not, because like when you look at, yes, Ariel in the Disney movie, she's portrayed as a female with long hair, but she's a mermaid. You don't know. They don't show genitalia. This story was about falling in love with a human and sharing love with humans. And he literally wrote this story in hopes to win over this man. He says, "Our friendship is like mysteries. It should not be analyzed. And I long for you as though you were the beautiful Caribbean girl." But she wasn't. He wasn't a Caribbean girl. He was a male. And he longed for this individual just like anybody else would long for anyone else. And so this story came out of a place of a man falling in love with a man. And here we are tearing apart this story for no reason. Mm-hmm. And so it says in this article, it says, so when people try to argue that Ariel has to look a certain way to be true to the real story, maybe remind them that the true version of the story was a sad tale of unrequited love written by a bisexual author.
I can tell you right now, if that were to sort of kind of be what's out there right now and people were arguing, I can tell you that countless parents are probably going to lose their shit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I am really disappointed.
I'm sorry. Anderson displayed himself. He was the prince in the story. I just want to put that out there.
Okay. So he fell in love.
Because that's what I would do. I'd be Prince Eric.
He fell in love with a fish.
He fell in love with a person, not a fish. He fell in love with a soul. That's what the story's about.
It's a fish. Which is, it's a mermaid. It's
you're
a fish.
Ruining the point, Tommy.
No, I understand the point that you're trying to make, but we're also talking about the fact that a very beautiful, gorgeous, young black lady, black woman, who was selected to play Ariel in the upcoming, I believe it's a live version of a movie.
No, I think it's a remake.
Well, is it the cartoon or is it an actual live? Okay, now I'm really confused. Because
you look at Aquaman. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be something similar. It's going to be like a CGI. It's going to, you know, it's going to be a movie. It's going to be a remake, and it's going to be with real people and not.
There are people out there that are trying to scientifically prove that Ariel should be white. It's a fucking fish. I'm sorry, people. It can be any color it wants. It can be any character it wants to be, and it can certainly be any freaking race it could want to be.
I think the conversation about race, it blows my mind. I mean, like, why does that even matter? Why is that even a thing that we bring up? When you hear about I've been seeing a couple of things where it's like, oh, you know, white people stand up and we say, oh, we're not racist, but then Ariel's cast as a black individual,
and they lose their shit.
And here I am, I'm like, who gives a shit? Because homosexuals have been fighting for representation in media for so long, mm-hmm. and we finally have some decent type of representation. And I feel as though the African American community should have just the same representation as everybody else. And whether it's Ariel or whether it's like Pocahontas or whoever, it doesn't fucking matter. It just means it's just a person sharing their love. It's like a person living their life.
Like, I think, like, for example, I think that Disney's doing a lot of things right today, given the temperature of the society and the conversations that are behind the whole race issue. Like, for example, Little Mermaid, they casted a black lead, which to me is fantastic and amazing. It's been 30 years since we had a little white Ariel running around. It's time for a little black girl to have her day in the spotlight and be able to actually represent the entire other part of, you know, the fan base that doesn't get to see themselves represented on screen. And it's a no-brainer. And the fact that Disney decided to do it, it was their decision. So your opinions, for all you racists out there that just want to, like, go out there and start attacking people because you think that, you know, Ariel should only be white, it's like, they made the decision, and no matter what the fuck you say, it's still going to be a beautiful black girl representing Ariel in the next upcoming biopic or the live action film of The Little Mermaid.
And another thing, it's like, look at the world we're living in right now. Look at everything that's actually going on that needs attention paid to. And you are sitting on Facebook bitching about the fact that Disney wants to represent a community that's underrepresented in a very beautiful, popular story. Why?
And again, so props to Disney for doing what they're doing. I just saw and I'm not changing the subject, but it's part of all this. I just saw a preview for the upcoming live action film Mulan. They casted an actual Asian person, South Asian person for the role. Bravo. Because had I seen white person being casted to play some sort of, you know, minority group, I would probably lost my shit too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between, and as a white person, I can say this, there's a difference between you losing your shit over being unrepresented and a white person losing their shit because what they classify is correct or what they saw as a child is different and not correct. I'm trying to say what we classify as what it should be is not what it should be. It should be is represented by the appropriate ethnicity.
I read a comment on one of my Facebook feeds. One of my friends posted something about this, and some dude on that timeline had the audacity to say white people will get through this. Get through what? What the fuck are you going to get through? You know, you're not the one that had to sort of kind of been snatched from your homeland, brought here against your will, made to work days long, all day long, 18 hours, probably 20-hour days to work for nothing.
Yeah.
You lost your identity. You lost your home. You lost your people. You were oppressed. You were beaten. You were lynched. You were literally tried to literally erase this amazing, beautiful community from this world. Mm-hmm. And you'll get through this? What exactly are you going to get through? It's a fucking fish. Get over it. It's going to be beautiful. She's going to be amazing. She's a very talented young lady. Actually, they both are, because they're sisters. And I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. And I don't want to dive too deep in this because I could probably get myself into trouble as a white individual talking about this. But I do think that it is an important conversation to be had. And I think that individuals in the Caucasian community need to calm down and embrace the fact that change is important and change is happening. And whether we have a shit house White House right now, it's going to change. It's going to happen. And we need to embrace it because there is so much beauty in what this country is. And this country is all of the people, not the white people. And the white people are going to be pushed out of power if they don't embrace and join and make room at the table for everybody else.
And that's important. People need to be represented. And that's the only way that you're going to see change. Get your ass on that table. Mm-hmm. But anyway, going back to Disney, like I've told you before, I barely watch any Disney movies at all. But you know what? I think the remake of The Little Mermaid is going to be something that I want to see, because I want to see that young, amazing, beautiful young lady do a fantastic job and shut all these motherfuckers up. That being said, mm-hmm. I'm done.
Okay. Let's close it out because I got to pee.
Oh, all right. Well, so we have the Mama Kim's Minute coming up. So let me get my timer, because you're supposed to do this, read all of this in less than a minute.
I know.
So let's do this.
Hold on. I need to make it bigger.
No, not 30 minutes. One. You ready?
Yeah, sure.
And we're going to go in 3, 2, go.
All right, everybody. So it's Mama Kim's Minute. We have 6 things to talk about. First, same-sex penguins, of course. They were welcome to adopt a chick. So Marmara and Rocky of the Sea Life London have welcomed the pitter-patter of a webbed feet little baby. Number 2, Amazon removes books by gay cure conversion therapy author. A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality is the most well-known conversion therapy book, and it has been removed from Amazon. Number 3, even some Republicans are urging the Supreme Court to protect LGBTQ employees. Republicans. 4, British TV personality faces anti-LGBTI backlash for attending World Pride. Scarlett Moffat says that she lost over 700,000 followers over her decision to go to the LGBTQ plus event in New York. 5, Queer Eye Anthony and JVN kiss, and it broke the internet.
Jonathan Van Ness.
6, family of 4 accidentally books Virgin's Pride Flight, and they had a blast. I didn't make it.
A minute and 17 seconds, but that's okay. You tried.
Yeah, and I took the story out.
So listen, very quickly. So you mentioned something about Amazon removing a book for a gay cure conversion therapist author. Was it by chance the author that you emailed from our Gay Talk account? Remember that one?
Was I slamming him?
Yes.
Probably. Oh, yeah.
Same.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
No, I'm not sure. We would have to look at it, go back, because that was a couple weeks ago.
All right. So we have two more things. Do you want me to take this one, or do you want to do it?
Can I just talk about one quick thing? So the family of 4 that accidentally booked the Virgin Pride flight. So it was a flight on Virgin Airways that was literally on its way to New York for the World Pride. Mm-hmm. And all of these people were dressed in drag.
Yeah.
A lot of gay men, everybody, the entire community was there. And then there was this family of 4, mom and dad, and these 2 kids that were just sitting up, and these drag queens were coming up and down the aisle, and these kids were like up in arms. They were just having such a good time. And it was just so cute to see like them just embracing the experience.
So,
but anyway.
So I believe it was somewhere around either November or January when we first started talking about the fact that World Pride was happening in New York City. We had talked about Virgin doing a Pride flight. Not only that, but the employees, the people that were working on the flight were drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
And they were serving you in full drag, mm-hmm. and having such a good time. So this is amazing this is an experience that they'll never forget.
Agreed.
And that's how you make allies. Get the drag queens to do it.
All right.
All right, so we've got our Gay Talk term. Of course, it's brought to you by...
I'm going to do it because this is my thing. You can do the next one.
And now you can do it.
No. All right, so this week's Gay Talk term is brought to you, of course, by GayRealEstate.com. And it is RAIN. And RAIN is to live a full, happy life of a demanding, pushy queen.
Oh, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day. Every single day. I look at that right mm-hmm. there. You're missing your tiara. Oh, she's got it.
Well, I had to take it off because of the headset.
Yeah, I know.
It's a long story.
All right. And on this day in gay history?
Of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
Am I doing it?
Do you want to do it?
Fine. Harry Hay and Rudy Greenwich. I'm saying that wrong. Met. So these two were the founders of the Machine Society, which I know I'm saying that wrong, which was the first organization to promote homosexual rights in the United States. And that was in 1950, July 8th, 1950 in California.
Of course, it's California. California always does it first. You know, they're amazing. Anyway, all right, so listen, we've got some announcements. If you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite web browser or device or wherever you listen to our show. You can also support us on Patreon, which is a service that allows you, our listeners, to support our show with a monetary donation every month. And Chris is not in studio, so I will let you take this.
So next week, it is all about The Dish, another great episode filled with stories impacting the LGBTQ plus community. And thank you, thank you, thank you to our guest, Dr. G, for joining us for another amazing episode to talk about his recent Tales from a Tale. You can check out this information and more at medium.com.
That's right. And of course, hopefully we'll have Chris back if she's not going through it again.
Can we put a rubber on it?
Yes, we can. How many rubbers do you want to put on it?
I've never said that before.
I know.
I don't know. Let's just put one because putting more than one is actually unsafe. So we're going to put one rubber on it. And our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It's also available for a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. Nick announces more. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can do that by heading over to our website, clicking on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser, where you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, you can leave a question or submit a question for the cast or an individual host. And you can also call us at 334-GAY-TALK if you need the numbers. It is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night.
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.